and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please?
Are you ready?
Yo, what up, what up? It's your boy Rabino.
And this DJ Erm in the building.
And you listening to the Up and Up podcast.
Yeah.
Wait, what are we doing?
I don't know, just listen.
Yes, 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 yes. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
What it do, what it do?
Ladies and gentlemen, you're tuning to the Up and Up podcast on the Up and Up Network. I'm your host, Rabino.
And I'm DJ Erm, man.
What's up, man?
What's going on?
You sound live today, bro.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Come on, man. Yeah. Allergies kind of kicking in, but
okay.
Can't stop, won't stop.
Yeah. Oh,
you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was my quote too.
Yep.
Yeah, it's good. It's good, man. Good energy in the room. For those of you tuning in, this is the Up and Up podcast. As I stated, this is the Up and Up podcast where we focus on cultivating culture, right?
Yes,
we do that
sir.
By providing amazing stories of individuals, groups, movements, right?
Yep. Yep.
The hustlers, the shakers, those who are breaking down barriers, taking up space.
Yes, sir.
Not only for all of us who are currently here, but for the next generation, right?
Yeah.
That's what we're doing it for. Definitely want to shout out the team in the room. You know, if I don't shout them out, they kind of like, you feel that a little bit, you know, they ain't gonna say it. They ain't gonna tell me, but I'll be feeling it. So shout out to the team in the room. And again, shout out to the first time listeners. Welcome to the family and the consistent supporters and listeners. Shout out to y'all. You already know what it is.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. I'm feeling good, man. Like I said, I love coming in here doing these episodes because we always get a chance to, really embark on a journey, man,
mm-hmm.
and learn about someone's journey,
mm-hmm.
right? I feel like everybody's story is unique.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's story matters too, right?
Yep.
And today's guest is someone who's truly, I would say, always led with community at the forefront of her creativity. And she's doing it her own custom way, right?
Yeah.
You see what I did there?
Yeah, like that, right? Yeah.
She's definitely a true culture cultivator who's keeping everything she's doing on the up and up. Today we're joined by the multifaceted artist. She's a muralist, dancer, choreographer, television host, connector, entrepreneur, the founder of T-Dub Customs, as well as her own store known as Resole 206, which is Seattle's newest premier sneaker cleaning service and home for sneaker care. I can keep going.
Yeah.
But if y'all get the picture, man, we're with someone who's very special, unique, and really has been making her contributions, which is ultimately what matters, right?
Yeah.
And we're super honored to have her in the building, excited. Without further ado, let's just get straight to him. And our guest is the amazing Takiya Ward, a.k.a. T-Dub. Can we get a round of applause?
Yeah.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you guys so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And that intro is fire.
Thank you.
Love you guys' intro music. Very nice.
He don't miss with the intro.
So. I tell him, man, every good album needs a good intro, man. I say that.
True.
You know what I'm saying?
Very true.
But thank you for being here, man.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, I feel like I always feel like it's long overdue. We were just talking about it, like, you're so familiar with what people do. You watch them, you support them from afar, but it's like sometimes we just got to connect, you know?
Most definitely.
Yeah. And collab. So pleasure having you here. Yeah. How's the day treating you?
So far, so good. You know, I'm excited. I'm happy to be here. Very much looking forward to this conversation. Any opportunity to converse about the city, about Seattle, what we got going on,
mm-hmm.
you know, the movers and the shakers, people really doing it and really about that action. I love those opportunities. So I'm happy to be here.
Mm. Yeah. Pleasure having you.
We love it.
Yeah.
So we start every episode with the quote of the day, like something to get the vibe right, get the conversation started.
Love it.
Brother Man Erm,
what
you got for us, man?
The quote of the day is almost always the creative, dedicated minority has made the world better.
Mm. Mm. That's facts.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Who's that quote by?
Martin Luther King.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I like
verse
that
to live by.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you run that back one more time?
Yeah. So the quote is almost always the creative, dedicated minority has made the world better.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Might have to get rid of that almost part.
Yeah.
Always. Yeah.
I know, right? Yeah.
Definitely.
You know what I mean? Nah, man, that's a good one. I love that. So Takiya, we always or T Dub, I mean, I'd call you either one.
Either way. Takiya, I got a lot of names.
Yeah, I know.
I got a lot of names. You call me whatever you need to.
So, you know, obviously this platform is built on people's journeys, right? And we really want to highlight the context that it takes to really chase and pursue what you want,
mm-hmm.
What you want to contribute. But before we dive into the journey, I definitely want to give people, you know, those who follow you, those who already have been supporting you, or those who are just new to the party, a little bit of insight on how they can continue to support you, because in recent, you know, happenings about a week ago or a week and a half ago,
yep, last
The Resoul 206 was unfortunately broken into. Yes. And so I love that, you know, you feel like this could also be an opportunity to kind of educate people on like how they can support not just only your business, but future situations for other businesses who go through that.
Yeah, I mean, it's the most unfortunate thing that could happen for a business that has only been open 5 months, you know. I've been working for the past few years to get the store, you know, to this point. And so for this to happen so soon in the game is definitely really tragic. I've been going through it personally, emotionally, all the kind of things that, you know, come with that process. We suffered a pretty huge loss, but, I mean, my community has been behind me. The city is behind me, and I feel very well taken care of, and I'm super grateful for my family, my friends, my community, but most importantly, my customers who have just been like, you know, it's just shoes. I'm more hurt that you were hurt, and I'm, you know, we're with you. We're not gonna, you know, take our business away, that kind of thing. So that I've just been incredibly grateful for that. And we are, you know, a new business, a small business is literally just me. My soul is just me. You know, so I do all the orders, I do all the bookkeeping, behind the scenes, everything. It's a one-woman show. And so these kind of situations can definitely, you know, lead to a lot of huge losses. But if people are interested in supporting what we have going on, supporting a Seattle-born and raised artist, entrepreneur, you know, community member, activist, that sort of thing, we have a Give Butter currently running. So givebutter.com/resoul206 if you'd like to donate to our recovery efforts. You know, we're going to keep that going. We're definitely on the lookout for, you know, who might have been responsible. You know, we're not letting up on that end at all. You know, and just trying to take it one day at a time. Yeah, it's definitely it's been a gnarly week. It's definitely been a really gnarly week, and you know, I'm just really grateful for all my people really just holding me up. And I can definitely remember a time a few years ago where something like this would have broken me. You know. And it would have like caused me to go into a deep depression. I'm in the house. I'm not going to work. I'm, you know, doing all those things, but I took a couple of days and I was right back to work. And people are still showing up and dropping off shoes, and people are still getting orders, and you know, the train keeps moving. You know, this, and this is a huge part of entrepreneurship, right? Especially when it's just you. We gotta keep doing the thing. So, you know, I'm grateful for my people, and we're gonna keep doing the thing, and we're here to stay. Representing Seattle, representing the CD all day, every day. You know, so that's just what we gotta
do. We love it, man. We love it. Yeah, and I just think it's important for people to know, like, like you said, there's so many sides that come to, you know, having a business. And but I think it's also like the responsibility that you already kind of felt to like, you know, represent. And I think sometimes people look for how people other people respond to situations as like a guide for them. So definitely want to just salute you and, you know, make sure we can support that as well.
Thank you. I think one of the biggest things that I've learned from this process so far is just like the need for connection. You know what I mean? Like, we got to be connected to our neighbors, to our people. If you see something, say something. You know, I feel like a lot of times we're in this space now where we're just kind of like seeing a lot of stuff and not, and just desensitized to a lot of things, and we just kind of become numb to a lot of situations. And it's like, we can't operate like that. The people can't do that. You know, so I'm definitely like taking my licks, taking another chin, but I'm making it a point now to be committed to being a community member and saying something when I see something. And making sure my people know that I'm there for them. For real.
That's real.
We're also here for you, too, if you need anything from us. So
really appreciate that.
Definitely.
This right here, this is it. Being able to speak to it.
Definitely.
So just to switch gears a little bit, let's talk about your upbringing, where you're from growing up, you know.
Seattle born and raised.
She let it be known early.
I'm from Seattle. I'm the second generation of my family born in the city. My mom was born here. My family came in the 60s, Boeing, you know, you know the deal. Like, a lot of legacy families here in Seattle. It's kind of the same kind of story. So early 60s, my family came here. You know, we planted our roots in the Central District, 28th and Union. The building that my grandfather actually moved into, the apartment complex, is still there. So that's definitely something that's very, you know, that's special to me. You know what I mean? To have that marker still be standing, you know, with all the stuff that's going on. So, yeah, my family's been here. Grandfather worked for Boeing. My mom is, you know, entrepreneur herself. She does a lot of legal stuff, a lot of paper pushing, but she's on a lot of big contracts as far as, like, you know, all the things going on in the city, from light rail to convention center, you name it. She's working a lot of big stuff. And I come from a family of entrepreneurs, honestly. Like, everybody in my family at one point or another has owned their own business. You know, we're all about ownership and being your own boss and, you know, setting your terms, the way you want to live your life. Like, it's up to you how that looks. And we're about sweat equity too, you know, putting in that work and making sure that, you know, we're of service as well. You know, whatever you do, making sure you're, you know, creating community and about your people and about your neighborhood and that kind of thing. So that's, you know, that's the upbringing, that's the roots. I've always been an artist, you know. I can remember, you know, as early as four, you know, my first easel, you know, and I'd be in there in my room painting, that kind of thing. And, you know, growing up in Seattle, obviously, it's a very creative, very, you know, diverse, culturally diverse city. I always say, like, whatever you're doing, you can find somebody that's going to be a fan of it. Whether it's playing spoons or, painting watercolor, you know, painting sneakers, you know what I mean? You name it, like, you're going to find somebody who's rocking with what you're doing. So I think that really empowers us to kind of think a bit more outside of the box. A lot of stuff. Like,
no, that's actually interesting because even like learning a little bit more about your story before this episode, it seemed like you were like more encouraged to like just be expressive and and try those artistic things and those creative things when you were younger. And I would love for you to talk about that because I feel like, you know, a lot of kids growing up, you know, parents, some parents can be like, you're doing this. And why are you doing that? Right. So I can you talk about like, well, I don't know if that was the case for you, but if it was, can you talk about the importance of that and like how that helped shape you?
The most important, because my mom is a creative too. You know, I remember when I was younger, I would see her kind of like drawing and doodling things, and she, you know, she had skills, like she was very creative, but of course she was a single mom, so she had to put creativity aside to take care of her kids. You know, so I saw that sacrifice early on as well. But she always encouraged us to like, whatever we wanted to do, she was like, yeah, do it. Especially when you're a kid. You know what I mean? Like, she was like, if you want to play basketball was one of the first things I picked up after dance. So dance was the first thing. And then basketball was the next thing. And, like, she always encouraged us to, you know, to do those types of things, to be active, to be physically active. You know, have those opportunities to meet other kids, that sort of thing. So she was always incredibly encouraging of that. And, yeah, I think she is probably the reason why I am at where I'm at, to be quite honest, because, you know, I think especially now when I look back, I'm like, yeah, she was always the champion. You know, nobody else was. Mom Dukes was repping. You know, she was at every game, every recital, you know what I mean? And she would make costumes for us, that kind of thing. Like, she was really, you know, the Renaissance mom. And so definitely a huge proponent of me feeling comfortable, taking that sort of leap of faith, starting a business like this, opening a store, all the things that have kind of come to fruition the past few years. She's definitely been the person that's kind of, you know, on my side the whole time.
We always talk about that on the show, like how, like certain things you went through when you were younger, like certain, like they just, they shape, they connect to what you're doing now. And a lot of times if we just reflect, you'd be like, oh, okay. That's why I was like that.
And it takes some time, but eventually, eventually it clicks. You know, like I find myself reminiscing on a lot of the lessons my mom was trying to instill in us as kids. You know, you always have a choice. You know what I mean? Like that sort of thing. And now, now it's clicking, you know, 30 years later.
And them lessons come late, man. I swear.
That's right. You know, it, that don't mean don't give them.
No.
You know what I mean?
Seriously.
So,
seriously.
They work.
That's dope. So you did talk about playing basketball and you know, doing dance and stuff, so I kind of like to ask, like, what were the lessons that you learned from doing those activities too at a young age?
I mean, dance was the first thing. So my mom, the story goes, is like, I started walking very young. I want to say she said like 9 months I was like, I was walking around like super young. And so she was like, oh, she's going to be a dancer. So as soon as I, you know, was old enough, she put me in ballet classes. And, you know, I'd be in these ballet rooms with these kids my age. And I felt like I was just kind of outshining a lot of people. And so, you know, the instructor would give you the lesson. And I'd be like, all right, I got it. What's next? But I couldn't, you know, they weren't going to advance me. They were just going to keep me where I was at. So I started, kind of off and just was like, all right, I'm gonna do my own thing. You know what I mean? So I was a bit of a rebel kind of early on, and but dance was definitely my first love. And then, you know, going into, you know, elementary school, that kind of thing, I picked up a basketball, and I just really take to things. I take to things pretty quickly. Like, I think it's just natural talent. Like, call a thing a thing. It's like, I'm very talented. So, you know, I picked up a basketball and I was just, and it was like kind of game over. So that became my stage. And I think also kind of understanding, you know, from a very young age that I was different, mm-hmm. you know what I mean, as far as like my presentation and how I carried myself, mm-hmm. you know, basketball became the arena where I felt like I could really be myself, mm-hmm. you know, and I can kind of express and explore a little bit more.
Yeah.
And I was good at it, you know, so I was like, oh, yeah, I'm doing this. We gonna keep with this. So a lot of my years were spent on the basketball court, you know, and just sort of learning, you know, what it means to be a leader, what it means to be a team player, mm-hmm. What it means to be faced with a challenge and overcoming adversity. Those mm-hmm. sorts of things that you kind of learn on the court,
yeah.
The sort of physical and mental fortitude of just being able to endure, you know, yeah. an entire game,
yeah.
having mm-hmm. things kind of be on your shoulders, things hanging in the balance,
yeah.
you know, 10 seconds connecting. On the clock, like all it's that, all you know what I yeah. mean? So it all kind of like, I learned that stuff pretty early. And, but it was always fun for me, mm-hmm. you know, because it was like, I didn't necessarily think of it as like what it became, which was a bit more sort of political and like, you know, when you get older, when you get in the uppers, like, especially now, I don't yeah. even know what these kids are going, like, middle yeah. school, elementary yeah. school.
Yeah. One of my homies sent me a highlight tape of some middle school. I was like, bro, why are you sending me this right
it's
now?
It's nuts. Yeah. Like, it's a whole different level. But when I was a kid, it was really more about having fun.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Hanging out with your friends and, you know, you win a couple games, yeah. go to McDonald's, you yeah. know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It was just like the life, yeah. you know, I was content.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
We
yeah.
won the game. Right. I got some food. Yep. I'm chilling.
Yeah.
But yeah, so those were my early years. It was a lot of, you know, a lot of practices, you know, a lot of drilling, a lot of, you know, mm-hmm. a lot of physical activity.
Yeah.
You know, I can mm-hmm. definitely say that for sure. It was a lot of physical and it was a lot of sort of just understanding. I think what's come of that for me is like the understanding of the body and how the body is also a tool for speaking and mm-hmm. language, mm-hmm. you know, like mm-hmm. when I think about like my dance nowadays and how I've become a freestyle dancer, mm-hmm. for me, it's really about being able to speak with my body.
Gotcha.
It's not yeah. necessarily about going into a battle and winning a battle,
yeah.
or, you know, mm-hmm. being able to get the kill off and do all yeah. the things and boom, boom, boom. Yeah. It's not about that. It's just yeah. about being able to fit, to express, mm-hmm. you know, emotionally, mentally
yeah.
through my body.
There we yeah. go.
You know what I mean? So I feel like that is kind of what all of that sort of led to.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. Now, as we go along, so you went to Garfield High School, correct?
G, represent.
Yeah. Okay, there you go. So I read that it was around that time where the custom sneaker design kind of spark clicked for you.
Yeah.
And obviously, I'm sure you've done a lot of artistic things prior to that, but I'm just curious, like, what was it about the custom sneaker art design mm-hmm. lane that sparked it for you, and like, can you just speak to like how that probably kind of carried you forward?
Yeah, sure forward? Thing. So how the story goes is actually in middle school, I was working on a class project. Mm-hmm. So I'm in my room, I'm at my desk, I'm chilling, like painting this thing. And for whatever reason, a glob of paint fell from the brush that I was using onto a pair of shoes I had next to my desk.
Mm.
And so I just picked up the shoe, I'm like, oh shit. And I'm kind of looking at it and I'm examining it and I'm just like, for whatever reason, that was the spark.
That's crazy.
So that is what led to me investigating
yeah
paint and shoes, you know, because I had never really seen it before, but once I started kind of digging, I just sort of like rabbit holed into this world mm-hmm. of like people customizing shoes.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you know, I was on Google, like custom kicks, looking on all the stuff, and I would see a lot of SpongeBob stuff, a lot of, you know,
that's a dope perspective though.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
it could be two things.
Yeah,
god damn,
right,
god, messed on my shoes, or
yeah.
it was
or
the,
yeah
how can I make this,
it was literally better. The catalyst.
That's crazy.
I just started digging, I just started educating myself on what that was, and I would tinker with things. It really became a hobby for a couple years, and then in high school, you know, I decided to make my first kind of thing, and I think the first thing that I ever painted was a pair of jeans that I had gotten from Puyallup Fair.
Yeah.
So I got a pair of jeans airbrushed at the Puyallup Fair, and they had faded hella hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, I really want to wear them, but they're just hella faded. So I just painted over what was there.
Yeah.
And I rocked them at school the next day. And people were like, yeah, that was great. You know what I mean? And then I was like, all right, boom.
We got
you
it.
Know what I mean? I got a thing. So that was really the spark that sort of led to me not just painting things for myself, but painting things for other people.
Mm. Yeah.
And so then people would, you know, hit me up, purple and white, I need my fit done. Or you know, the dancers would, you know, hit me up to do stuff for them and whatever the case may be. And so that, you know, I'd have a little change in my pocket too.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, there's something to
there
this.
There we go.
Yeah.
You know? And so that's kind of like where it really started. And, you know, again, just opportunities to express, opportunities to create. And I always say I love a challenge, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. People like give me these sort of tasks, like I want this on this with this. And so it's like I got to take these these things and make a, you know, make a thing. So it was always really fun for me. And it's something that stuck with me, you know, all the things that I've done, dance, sports, painting, it stuck. You know, anytime I tried to put it away, it always came back. So I knew it was here to stay.
That's amazing.
That's dope.
That's amazing, like, origin story right there. I love that.
I'm excited to make it into a movie or some sort
of movie. I was seeing it right there.
You can see the, picture, right? Yeah. So.
So what was, so I know you went to the New York Institute of Technology, right? Yes. So what was that, I guess, transition like, going from Seattle to New York, you know, and then studying architecture?
Yeah,
like
definitely.
It's the like plan, 9 day.
I know. The plan was definitely always go to college. And my mom was like, you know, when you go, get out of Seattle. That was the rule, basically. She was like, you're not going to UW. You need to experience the world. And so I tried to find schools as far away as I possibly could. And I knew I wanted to study architecture because I was always very interested in residential architecture. Growing up in Seattle, we have a lot of beautiful homes here. And, you know, my drive to school every day was on Lake Washington Boulevard. And so I would just see these gorgeous houses on the water. And I was always just incredibly fascinated by that. And so I was like, if I'm going to go to school, I'm going to study architecture. Looked up architecture schools. And that's how I ended up at NYIT. And it was the only school I applied to. And I got in.
Wow.
So I'm seeing the theme here. Anything she wants to do, she's going to do it.
You know what I mean?
It's going to click. So it's going to click.
For real.
So, you know, I was super excited. Like, I'm going to New York City, baby. We're going to be in Times Square. It's going to be lit. So I get there, and my school was literally in the sticks of Long Island.
Oh, man.
And I'm like, oh, my God, what is this? What have I done? So it was intense. College was a very, very intense experience. One, obviously, because of the major, architecture school is very grueling. It's a lot of hours in the studio. It's a lot of critique. It's a lot of making models and drawings and doing them over and starting over. And it's like physically exhausting. I would probably liken it to like going to medical school or something like that. Medical school is probably like more intense, but like architecture was hard. So just the coursework alone, being across the country, away from my family. I didn't have any resources. I didn't have no people over there, no for nothing. You know what I mean? And then just the sort of like financial hardship of just like, you know, you got to get financial aid, get the loan, that sort of thing. So I don't have no extra money. I don't got no car.
Especially in New York, too. it was expensive in New York,
It was a lot. So I would literally be on the train going back and forth to like the art supply store to get the things that I needed for classes. Like, I would spend my weekends in the library, you know what I mean? Because that was the only place I could really study and like kind of do my thing and like, or have access to a computer. You know what I mean? Like, it was a lot. It's very intense. And it definitely shaped a lot of things for me. But I think I picked up a lot as well in the sort of realm of design and perspective, and understanding the sort of more technical parts of creating. You know, so I have a lot of tools that I picked up at school that I still use to this day.
That's amazing. That's, that's amazing that you have both perspectives. Because some people have the creative down pat. Because the creative is like enjoyable. It's fun, you know. But then the structural and the strategic side of it is like
repetition.
I don't want to do that. I'm trying to create. But it's important to have both because you can't have one without the other.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? That's amazing. So let's kind of take it to, you know, after college, and I'm curious about T-Dub Customs and like the start of that. Now, obviously, you've been doing your thing, right? So we know that. But I'm just curious, and maybe this can be advice for people out there, but like, how do you know, or what do you, can you recall the moment when you had that mind state of like, okay, like, it's finally time to establish this as a thing, as an entity, as a platform, and put it out there? Because I feel like you could be doing something for years. But until you actually put it out there, it's a little different. So what was your mindset at that time?
It was, I can remember, I can recall the moment very well. I ended up having to leave school because I couldn't afford to stay. So I came home to Seattle, and I was trying to figure out, do I go back? Do I stay? Like, what's the deal? Couldn't afford to go. So now I'm a college dropout. I'm having to deal with that, you know, working 9 to 5s. Chilling, that kind of thing, but I wasn't being creative. You know, I wasn't creative at all, and I was just like the day-to-day grind, the 9 to 5, go to work, you know, go to the bar after, you know, do a thing. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, that repetition. I was just like, I don't like this. Yeah. You know, so I was just very much like, okay, what is going to be the next thing? Like, what's going to be my next step? And I went to work one day, and I had an interaction with a customer that was just like, hell no.
Yeah.
I was like, I am out of here, one of them days. It was the final straw, because I could already feel myself getting, you know, tense in the shoulder. I was like, I'm not comfortable. I'm not doing my thing. I'm not myself.
Yeah.
You know? And I had that interaction. I was like, nope, I'm out. Mm-hmm. That's it. I quit my job that day. And I was like, I gotta find the thing. You know, I ended up having to live on my mom's couch for a little while. Mm-hmm. You know, I wasn't making ends meet, that sort of thing. So I was down. I was down bad. But I was like, I know that I'm not supposed to be there.
Yeah.
You know? And some of my homegirls, we were having conversations, and then they ended up having a conversation about starting like your own LLC. And I was like, that might be something. So one day I'm in my homegirl's kitchen, and we're both like on the computer, like, we're gonna do this. So we did it together, and that was January 2016, and I formed Teed Up Customs LLC. And I was like, I do the custom thing, so we're just gonna do customs.
Yep.
So I started the LLC. And then I just hopped on the vendor markets here in Seattle. My homegirl, Osiris, shout out to Osiris. She had a market called Badwill Market that she used to run.
Okay.
And it's a bunch of vendors. People sell jewelry, whatever the case may be. And I would have my setup was so janky, bro. I had my little TV dinner table tray. And I had my paints. And I would bring T-shirts. And I would paint T-shirts for folks just on the spot.
Wow.
So whatever you wanted it to say on it, I would just paint it on there.
Mm-hmm.
Like paintbrush and paint. That was it. And that was my setup. I had a little cardboard. Like, it was mad. It was mad janky.
Yo, that's amazing. Because, you know, you look back, you can't get those moments back.
Right.
You
know what I mean? Yeah, and I look at the photos now, I'm like, wow. But, yeah, that was my setup. So 2016, I was like, all right, we're doing a thing. I'm living on my mom's couch. And I'm at home. I'm with her. And I'm, like, painting stuff for myself. I, like, would paint shoes. I'm like, I'm getting back in the game. We're going to paint some sneakers. I would paint personal pairs. Just kind of, like, you know, get my skills back. Mm-hmm. And I would go to these markets, and I would, you know, paint these shoes or paint these shirts. And people's, you know, word of mouth just started spreading hella fast. And that was the beginnings of Teed Up Customs. So I just hit the market scene super hard. Everybody started finding out I was doing things, and people started commissioning me for bigger things like shoes. And I did a couple backdrops in the earlier years, like some larger sort of like smaller mural kind of things.
Okay.
But yeah, a lot of clothes, a lot of that. And it was just like, you know, I wasn't making like buku money, but like a thing of like, you know, I felt affirmed in what I was doing. You know, I felt like, okay, this is where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah. And the reason I asked that, and thank you for sharing that, because the reason I asked that is because I feel like that is what people sometimes are not getting over, is the ability to just put yourself out there.
Right.
Because you won't even get certain opportunities unless people know or are aware, like, hey, I do this thing. So I know it can be a little overwhelming at first, but
for sure,
you know, I feel like people owe it to themselves to do it.
Absolutely.
You know, and you don't have to have it figured out clearly. Yeah. Like,
and the advice I would give is like, don't feel like you need to have everything to do a thing.
Yeah.
You know, if you have the will, if you have the ability, if you have the skill to do a thing, then do a thing. And so, because what you're doing is that you're sending a message to the universe to attract what you need.
There we go.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You have to say something to get something.
That's real.
Right? And if you're not saying nothing, don't expect to get everything.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm sure you guys probably had the same situation with the show. It's you know, you're set up probably, you know what I mean? It had to grow from somewhere, right?
Yes.
So you really have to, like you said, put yourself out there. But it's really just you speaking to the universe of what you want.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm.
And it's and someone is looking for you.
Yeah.
That's a whole nother thing. Yeah. Some people are looking for you, but you got to put yourself out there.
Exactly.
There's like so much power in that, because it's like, if you wait for it, you're never going to think it's perfect.
I was absolutely that person for a long time. I was like, I need this, this, and this, and I got to have the such and such set up and the $1,000 this, that, that. Yeah. No, absolutely not.
Yeah.
What you need to do is what you need to be doing.
Yeah.
You know, and the rest of it will come.
That's real.
Definitely. I know you kind of touched on this already, but, you know, going from 9 to 5 to, like, now you're an entrepreneur, your own business owner.
Mm-hmm.
What were, like, I guess some of the things that you learned that you didn't know before, like, earlier in your journey?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, I think early in the journey, You know, you're learning about what it means to have an LLC.
Yeah.
I mean, I think a lot of people nowadays, you see it on Instagram, you know, scrolling your, you know, feed, and it's like this easiest thing in the world, but it's not.
Yeah.
It's something that you really have to manage and you have to be proactive about.
Yeah.
Because things will come out of nowhere, and next thing you know, you're in default.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
So it's definitely important to be on your P's and Q's. And like, I was very fortunate that my mom, you know, being the paper pusher that she is, she always taught us the importance of A, your intellectual property, and B, of reading everything that you sign. You know what I mean? Like, make sure that you understand it.
Yeah.
First off, before you put anything on a dotted line. Yeah. And if you don't, then there's probably room for negotiation. You know, so that was always like something that she instilled in us from a very early age. And like, I think that is what really helped me to sort of get into a place of where I'm able to build the business and the creative.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I feel like a lot of times there's this sort of stipulation that, like, you know, creative people don't know business. Or, you know, artists, you know, there's like, I just want to make art. I don't care about the paperwork. You know what I mean? And it's like, nah, you can't be like that about your shit. Especially now that we're at a space where it's like seeing AI kind of develop and all these other things, all these digital assets and NFTs and whatever the case may be. And it's like, well, where's the truth? Where's the real? You know what I mean? Where's your IP? You know what I mean? If you can't differentiate, then who's going to?
That's real.
You know?
That's real. I've been preaching that for a while. Like, I feel like we got to find a way to convert what we do to the real world.
Exactly.
And make it connect to the real world, because that's going to be more sustainable at the end of the day.
Yeah. Documentation and timestamps is everything. You know?
And I like how you said, like, make sure you understand what you're reading.
Yes.
Because I could see some people probably reading a contract, not understanding it, but just saying, all right, kind of scared to ask questions because they don't want to look dumb or whatever the case is. You know? So I like how you touched on that.
Absolutely.
You know? Yeah.
Very important, especially now.
Yeah, those are good lessons. Now, I do want to dive into, 2020 was a year, right? It was a year for everybody, but I feel like it was also the perfect storm for creative response. That's how I would describe it. And so for you, you know, for those who don't know, but you were one of if not one of the most important folks who were part of leading and facilitating, I would say, one of the most artistic contributions that the city and region has seen in a long time, with the Black Lives Matter mural.
Yes.
That was done in Capitol Hill. It feels like so long ago, but it really wasn't. You know what I mean? But
up on 4 years.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. But can you just touch on like that period and how it was like, I don't know what that was like for you to like, during the time everybody was going through, like, that's why I said creative response, because I feel like sometimes all we can do is what we do, right? But just talk about like facilitating that, leading that, and like what that moment really meant, if you could reflect back on that.
Sure thing. Now that I'm thinking about it, it feels like every 4 years I have a very transformational moment. You know what I mean? Like, 2016, you know, quit the 9-to-5, did that. And then 2020, sadly, I got COVID. I got the OG at the very beginning of that. So March, I was down, like, got it super bad. Like, really, I was, like, in my apartment being like, am I about to make it out of this? It was, the very beginning was very much like, hospitals didn't know. There was no vaccine. Yeah. You know, there wasn't no testing. There was nothing. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you couldn't even go see the doctor. So it was like really intense. So I was having to like do a lot of self-care. And in that time, I did a lot of self-reflection. And I'd spend a lot of time just being like, okay, if we make it through this, what is life going to look like? You know? And so I was out for like a month and a half. And I just spent that time just sort of really communing with myself and trying to clear, you know, my mind and my body and heal physically, emotionally, mentally, like going through, you know, all the chapters of life, you know what I mean? And just being like, okay, is looking how you want to look? Like, do you know where you're going to? Do you like the things that life is showing you?
Yeah.
One of my favorite songs, Mahogany. But so I spent that time doing that. And my partner and I, we moved into a new apartment earlier that year as well. So we had the space to kind of just think and, you know, sort of be together. And then, you know, we're in the pandemic. It's like global. It's like, we don't know what's happening. We don't know what this is going to look like, how long it's going to take. You know, everybody thought it was 2 weeks for a while. And you know, it's like, all right, 4 months later, it's like, oh shit. So, you know, I'm trying to figure out, okay, homies are like, immediately, creativity because the whole city is boarded up.
Yeah.
Right. All the businesses are boarded up. So for us, that's a canvas. Mm-hmm. For anybody who does art, it's like all I see is canvas.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So we're, you know, trying to think and tinker. My homeboy Joey Nix and I were kind of planning and collaborating on a piece. And I was trying to like think of an idea and I was mulling on some stuff, but it just wasn't hitting. And so I was like, so now I'm getting down on myself. It's like, I'm an artist and I can't create right now. Like, this is bullshit. So, some time is passing. Then June rolls around and then the murder of George Floyd, you know? And I'm just like, you gotta be fucking kidding me.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, of all the shit that the world is going through.
Yeah.
Black men are still being murdered by police.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm like, Jesus could come from the fucking heavens right now and a black man would still get murdered.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what that event showed me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's no end to it.
Yep.
There's no end. There's nothing that's going to impede that sort of, you know. So I'm just like, fuck. So that is what lit the fire.
Mm.
So I'm like, okay, this is what's going on.
Yep.
My partner's in the street. She's in the protest downtown. I'm like, I'm not going out there because, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not going out.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? But I'm like, okay, what am I going to do? Like, how am I going to act as an artist, as a creative? What can I do? You know? And homies hit me up. They were like, yo, Capitol Hill, Chop Chaz thing. It's like, it's going crazy. And around that same time, my homeboy Joey Nix, he had saw a mural that happened. So the first mural was the one in D.C.
Okay.
The giant one that went, you know, all the way down. The White House type shit. And then he saw one that happened in, I want to say, South Carolina or North Carolina. That had the individual letters were different images and murals.
Okay.
So he saw that. He was like, yo, we got to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, all right, we're doing it.
Yeah.
So we went and surveyed the scene, went up to Chop Chaz. We looked around like, all right, this seems like a good spot. I put out the call immediately. I'm like, I put together this makeshift, you know, little call for artists. I'm like, we're doing a thing on Capitol Hill. If you're down, answer the call.
Yeah.
So I sent it to a bunch of people that I knew could do art on that scale quickly, and everybody answered the call. So that first was like, oh, shit, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I got 16 artists.
Trying to coordinate with that many people, too, that's
any
that's
other time would have been impossible.
You know what I mean?
For whatever reason, it all clicked in that moment. So from the moment Joey being like, we got to do a thing, to it being done was 2 days.
Wow.
Damn.
Yeah.
Really?
Really.
That's crazy.
Yeah. We went renegade. We went super like graffiti mode.
See, that's the most amazing shit. Yeah. Like that's just crazy. Cause you know how long it takes to just coordinate sometimes like the most simplest thing.
Yeah.
Like
mind you, this is a street mural.
Yeah.
This isn't
exactly.
On a wall. Yeah. This is on the ground. Yeah. So I had homies like pulling brooms from, you know, neighboring businesses and shit. We could sweep the street.
Yeah.
So we did it, you know, the proper, you know, channels, but we did it. You know what I mean? So like people were out there with brooms. We swept the street first. Our other homeboy Jaffe did all the sort of lettering, the kerning. So they're making sure that the proportions of the letters were accurate.
Yeah.
So that it read, you know, the way it needed to read. So he did all that chalk lining and shit. Boom, boom, boom. We're just going down, going. Mind you, the entire Chop Chaz is happening around
us. Yes,
you know, so it's like we managed to sort of like part the Red Seas and create this space of just like almost serenity and peace for ourselves.
Yeah.
Where it was like we were in these cones and it was just like peace and quiet. But outside of that was just like noise and action. But yeah, so people kind of sort of catching on. We went out there that night, cleared the street. We did all the white background first. And people were like, we get to the R of Matter, and people were like, yeah, it's so exciting, woo. Having no idea that the next day, we got these artists coming through to actually paint their individual art into these letters.
Wow.
So people saw it the first time and was like, yo, this is amazing, this is so dope. We're cheersing and shit on the street. Yeah. Everybody celebrating. They were none the wiser. So the next day, we came back, and everybody came and did their letters.
That, man.
Yeah.
Salute, because... Yeah. It's just like you reflecting, on that and just describing it the way you did. I think it's so important for like the average consumer to understand what goes into art sometimes. Yeah. Like, you know, for most of us, we saw it across our screen.
Sure.
And, you know, we appreciate it, but it's like you don't really know.
Yeah.
That's why context is so important.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
And I bought the paint with my own money. Mm. You know, I went to Home Depot and got as many colors as I possibly could. And, you know, so I took it upon myself to sort of, like, lead that effort. So I called the artists in. And I'm coordinating with Joey on the, you know, getting everything done and getting the baseline done. So basically sort of like curating this whole thing.
Yeah.
And so we get there that day and I got everybody paying. I'm like, you guys got water, you know where to go to the bathroom, da 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 da, doing a thing. Okay, everybody's here. Cool, cool, cool. I'm like, oh shit, I got to paint a letter. So fortunately one homie wasn't able to make it in time. And we were like, obviously it was very time sensitive because, you know, police are right up the street.
Yeah.
There was a scare while we were doing it of like, oh, the police are on the scene. So we're like, oh shit. Like,
yeah,
that's when it got real for me.
Yeah.
Before that, I was just like, okay, we're just making art. But then I was like, oh, actually, this is gnarly.
Yeah, we're in it.
We people could actually, you know, be harmed. Type shit. So that's when it really kind of clicked for me. But luckily that was, you know, just false alarm. But it came time for me to paint the letters and the one homie didn't show up. So I had the two T's.
Got you.
And so that's kind of how the two T's ended up happening. I was like, okay, I got these two letters. And so I ended up, I went back to my architectural roots and did the perspective thing to make it kind of look like the sort of like the, they were carved out of the street was to kind of represent the depth of the conversation, just how deep it is in this soil in America.
Yeah.
The conversation around Black Lives Matter or civil rights or Jim Crow or whatever the case may be, whatever you want to call it, it's been the same thing for every fucking generation.
Wow.
You know, so that's kind of how we ended up doing that.
I love that.
Man.
And so another thing, another thing I love about that is that, and I feel like a lot of people can relate, it's like we can all contribute something.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, especially in moments when you feel like, damn, I don't have the answers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not the expert. I'm not the most knowledgeable. Like, we had Gurmai on the show a few months back, and one of his messages was like, look at yourself and say, what is my gift?
Mm-hmm.
What is my gift and how can I contribute that?
Exactly.
And that's what's going to be most natural for anybody, right? Very so much. I just love that you shared that because in a moment like that, like you said, I'm not going outside to protest, but what can I do to contribute?
Yes.
It's not to say that is better than this or this is better than
not at all. Yeah.
We're just trying to help.
Yeah.
And I got to find my way to help. So.
And help from where you're at. And that was the biggest lesson for me too is like, everybody has a position to play. You know what I mean? Whether you're a doctor or a chef or an artist or a bubble blower, it doesn't matter what you do. You have a position to play.
That's
and you need to play from there, from that perspective. Like that is your,
nobody
can do that but you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it doesn't benefit the situation for you to jump into somebody else's thing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, now I got to protest or, oh, now I got to, whatever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like do from where you are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that was kind of the thing that, you know, and I've been doing that ever since.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's powerful.
That's so fire. And then did that kind of spark the Vivid Matter Collective?
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's exactly. So we, you know, we did the mural and it went viral.
Yeah.
you know, we obviously didn't expect that. We were just like, we were trying to get in and get out real quick. But it went viral and we're getting calls from Rolling Stone and BBC and all these publications about it. And it really, you know, shined a spotlight that we were not expecting, you know? And so we all just kind of looked at each other like, oh shit, we did a thing. Like, should we do something else?
Yeah.
You know? And so that's kind of how the group came together from that effort. So the Vivid Matter Collective became the artists that were responsible for the BLM mural.
Mm.
So all 16 of us, we came together. We would meet, you know, at Joey's bar and have conversations about, you know, how we would protect the art.
Because
there was a lot of people, obviously, with drones and shit out there, you know. And it was both. It was like a lot of celebration and it was a lot of trial and tribulation with that mural for us. Like, we went through a lot of shit. You know. Obviously, the city ended up backing us, you know, because they very well could have, you know, been like, vandalized, you're going to jail. But they decided to back us, you know, and protect the mural, which is obviously not expected. But a lot of people were upset.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people were like, you're wasting our tax dollars and you're vandals and this is bullshit and all these other things.
Yeah.
And then there's also people that are trying to, you know, come up off of it too. So a lot of people had, you know, drone shots out there. Mm-hmm. They would steal drone shots and try to make merch and make pins and make prints and shit.
Wow.
So we were having to fight people on, you know, from every angle after that, which is also why it was important for us to come together because then we could support one another in that because I couldn't imagine going through that by myself.
You know? For sure.
So
That's tough.
We, you know, we did VMC, we did a thing and we would just support each other and whatever we had going on individually. And, you know, everybody has their own style and has their own, you know, their own creative space that they're trying to cultivate.
Mm.
And so we're like, we just want to support each other in that. So that's kind of how VMC came about.
I love that.
Yeah,
no, it's really dope to see, like, you guys come together and then kind of, like, stay together, you know what I'm saying? Because it's like, sometimes we'll collab with somebody or collab with certain situations and be like, all right, you know, and then you guys, whatever. But that was dope to see. So.
Appreciate that. Yeah. And it's like, it's important for us too, like to have done that with each other. We also put that into everything that we did after.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So any organization that wanted to work with us, there were a lot. Everybody mm-hmm. calling us, oh, we want a mural, or oh, we want. Because you did this, now we want to be a part of that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it was important for us to show them that it's like, this ain't no fly-by-night shit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to work with us, we're talking longevity.
Yeah.
We're not trying to do a thing for now. We're trying to build.
Yeah.
You know? Yep. And so that became one of the tenets of what we, you know, we're trying to accomplish. And so everybody that we work with, it was that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Partnership.
For sure.
I think also it was important to show people that, like, you could be in the same space and still collab and do something.
Yes.
You know?
Mm.
So I think it was a very powerful message that I kind of got from the Vivid Matter Collective. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So.
Yeah. It was, and it, another thing, too, is, like, collaboration over competition.
Mm. Exactly.
Because I feel like a lot of times, especially on the art scene, you know, Seattle's small. Our black community is smaller.
Mm-hmm.
The black artist community is even smaller.
Mm. Yeah.
So what do we look like?
Yep.
Bickering and trying to tokenize, you know what I mean? Like it just made no sense. And I saw that when I started going out for artist calls and grants and things like that,
mm-hmm.
and public art, you know, kind of situations, being like, okay, this is a thing. Let me try to do some public art type things.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in these rooms with people that are my friends.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yep. And we're being pit against each other for what?
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
And so it's like, I'm done with that. I'm not competing. We're going to work together.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So a collaboration over competition became a big thing for us too.
I love it. Nice. I mean, that's how we get further.
Exactly.
You know, that's how things get done. I heard, I was literally watching an interview with Steve Stout the other day, and he was like, the best ideas come about when you're able to remove yourself from it and mm-hmm. not care about who gets credit for it.
Exactly.
He's like, that's how the idea can just be the idea and grow as big as it can possibly be. So I love that. Now, I know you're busy, but I want to give you a chance. We touched on it earlier,
mm-hmm.
but I want to touch on Resoul 206.
Yes, sir.
2023, you launched, right?
Yes.
You guys opened up.
Yeah.
Now, some can describe it however they want, but I would love for you to just kind of, like, give the people who don't know, like, an inside look in terms of the vision for the store, the space, and the brand, and what you want it to become.
For sure. So, you know, T-Dub Customs was solely customizing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, wearable art, hand painted, airbrushed, what have you. I did the mural actually at Midtown Square. That was another one of the big projects I did. The Central District Timeline is 120-foot mural
mm-hmm.
showcasing the history of the city. Thank you.
Yeah.
Through that effort, I got connected with the developer of that property.
Okay.
And they learned about what I do on the custom side, and they were like, you know, we have the storefront available. Would you be interested in turning your business brick and mortar?
Mm.
I'm like, oh, shit. Mm-hmm. You know? Obviously something I had dreamed about, but I never saw it coming as soon as it did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I also knew that I couldn't build a business, a brick and mortar store, off of customizing shoes.
Yeah.
Because it takes a lot of time and it's very expensive.
Mm.
Yeah.
You know? And it's very niche. You know?
Yeah.
So that is when I decided to build Resoul 206, which is the customizing, the cleaning, and the restoration.
Mm.
So our cleanings and restorations are sort of the bread and butter of the store.
Gotcha.
And the customizing is just kind of the cherry on top.
Mm. Yeah.
So we've built now a state-of-the-art facility where I'm able to do all of these things at, you know, a professional level.
Mm-hmm.
And we started that conversation in the 2021, beginning of 22,
mm-hmm.
of like getting the lease together, and you know, that took time because
yeah.
I'm like, I'm reading, I'm like, take that out. I want
yep.
So we made sure that was tight and that was right. And I've been working with the contractors and working with architects and real estate agents and lawyers and all those things. And again, talking about the business entrepreneur side, learning, you know, what that sort of conversation looks like. Because I had never done a brick and mortar thing before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I learned a lot from that process, you know, of what that whole sort of journey entails.
Mm-hmm.
And we finally got a chance to do our first soft open September 30th last year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been 5 months now. And every day is a new person and a new shoe and a new opportunity and a new challenge.
Yeah.
And so it's been great. And I'm so thankful to have the space to do what I love.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And to be able to create that space and build it off of what I imagine is the perfect way to do that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's been awesome.
It's dope.
Yeah. I love it. I love that, like, everything kind of comes full circle, it seems like.
Mm-hmm.
right? Even in talking about like your early, like your family's history, right?
Yeah.
And then to be where you're at now and
yeah.
and do what you're doing, I feel like I feel like everything's been written for everybody. Like, yeah. you know what I'm saying? So it's just amazing to see. I'm curious though, like, I did hear you talk about this, but how Resold 206, obviously the business has its specific kind of objective, but mm-hmm. like you also talked about how you want the store itself to kind of be more of like a community space.
Yes.
And somewhere where people feel like they can come and just be,
sure.
be a part of.
For
like,
sure,
can,
for sure.
Can you talk about how important that is for brick and mortars
yeah,
in general?
I think it's very important because I think one of the conversations we're having a lot nowadays, especially with our youth, is third spaces. Spaces where you don't have to spend money.
Mm.
Spaces where you can just exist, where you're not on the street.
Mm.
You can do a thing or develop a craft or develop yeah. a skill that doesn't require you to like shell something out. You know what I mean?
Mm.
And so for me, obviously being, you know, the sneakerhead that I am, I'm building a center of community around sneaker culture.
Yeah.
You know, and I want to be able to share what I know over 20 plus years of, you know, experience in sneakers and design and development and all the things.
Mm-hmm.
With our youth, because
yeah.
I started at Garfield,
yeah.
you know what I mean? So I'm reaching out to the kids at Garfield being like, yo, if you're really in the sneakers like you think you are,
mm-hmm.
you can come yep. show and prove right mm-hmm. over here, you know
yeah.
what I mean?
I love
so,
it.
But also, again, being able to share that sort of skill, that mindset, and also the entrepreneurial sort of understanding and aspects of it, too, of like, yep. this is what it looks like to turn a hobby into a business,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
and still be fulfilled in that
yeah.
and not
yeah.
get to a point where you're just like just daunted by, you know, the day to day. It's like there's so much opportunity in my eyes in this sort of craft that our community hasn't been able to explore, even though we made it,
mm-hmm.
you know, like
that's
we
true.
Are the reason that sneakers are popping,
yep,
you know,
exactly.
and now you see all these kids walking around with Forces and,
yeah.
you know, what have you, and all the tech bros or, you
yeah.
know,
come on,
on,
they
on
wasn't
on
there
StockX
when Nelly
and
them dropped.
Okay,
you know
give
saying?
Me two pairs,
yeah, I need two.
You know?
Yeah.
I need two.
So
yeah, that's
that, it's our shit, and that's why it's important for me to help people understand that is the case and the opportunities moving forward, because obviously sneakers have changed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're not made of leather and rubber anymore. They're
yeah.
made of composite material. So what does that look like?
Mm.
What does care look like for a plastic shoe?
Yeah.
you know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
So I think that's why spaces like this are important. And that's why, you know, the Resold 206, one store now, but we're definitely planning a franchise.
Okay.
We're definitely trying to create a track for individuals who are interested in sneaker care to get to a point where they can have their own space.
Yeah. No, it's important, man. It's important. It's like an essential utility.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
like certain like industries just have these like utility businesses
yeah.
where it's like they're not the sexiest or the glamorous, but they're
no.
the probably the most important.
Yeah.
And I think I'm not to say yours isn't the sexiest or nothing. I'm
no,
not saying that,
I mean,
but you know what I mean, though. Like it's important to understand your positioning, right?
Yes.
And where you how you can fit. So I love that.
Right.
I love
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
And I know you touched on like the youth and coming up, or whatever, in the sneaker game, but
mm-hmm.
even for us. You know, the pairs that we got in like 08 or something,
oh, yeah.
we need to restore them or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
So it's
yeah.
definitely
yeah.
something that's important to everybody.
I get
I
a
believe.
Lot of OG pairs. I get a lot of OGs and a lot of OG pairs.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be surprised. I've seen so many silhouettes and colorways that I've never seen before.
Yeah.
And it's only been 5 months,
mm-hmm.
you know, and people are pulling out grails. And I'm just like, wow.
Yeah.
This is incredible.
Yeah,
so.
Nah, definitely. I can't
definitely
wait. I can't wait
it.
To pull up.
That.
Yeah, we
yeah.
definitely. I can't wait to pull up and check it out.
Definitely.
For sure.
Yeah.
Man. Well, Takiya, I feel like we could talk to you forever. Honestly.
For sure.
Yeah.
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 But I always ask every guest this question. I'm just curious, like, what excites you for the future? And it could be near, it could be far, but just what comes to mind when you think about that.
Mm. When I think about the future, I think the thing that excites me most is, again, seeing that next generation take the torch,
mm.
you know, being able to pass that baton and being able to see, you know, the youth and what they imagine and what they experience and what they experiment,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean,
mm-hmm.
and how they sort of tinker and challenge themselves to think beyond whatever, you know, box has been laid in front of them
mm-hmm.
when it comes to this and when it comes to life, you know what I mean,
yeah.
just in general. And I feel like, you know, another reason why the store exists is an opportunity for me to be able to connect,
mm.
you know, like, because I think it's important for that intergenerational connectivity for us to all be able to learn from each other.
Mm.
You
yeah.
know what I mean? I feel like I hear and I see on social media and I hear on the news, you know, the sort of state of the world for our teens,
mm-hmm.
you know, and our youth
yeah.
and how just sort of like, in the wind. Yeah. They kind of seem like they are. And, you know, yeah. you're reading the stories about, you know, just incredibly tragic things. And yep. it's like, this should not be happening.
Yeah.
You know, it's yeah. like, who, what, again, what can we do?
What can we do?
Yeah. What can we do? Where can yeah. I be? How can I meet you where you are to yeah. kind of show you that there's more to life than what you think, you know, you've been given.
Mm. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's I look forward to what our youth will do with this world.
Mm. Me too. I love that.
For real.
I love that.
And also, where can people find you on, like, social media or mm-hmm. the internet? How can people get in contact with you?
For sure. TheReSoul206 on Instagram, website, all the things. The, TheResoul206. 206.
Tap in.
Yes, sir.
Make sure y'all tap in.
Yep.
Now, we ask every guest this question before we wrap things up.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can, what's one word to describe what keeps you on the up and up and why?
Ooh, one word. What keeps me on the up and up? That's a good question. One word.
And you could explain it too.
Truth.
Mm.
Yeah, I feel like I'm a Taurus also, so I'm very grounded, very much like, you know, truth is very important to me. It's been very important to me, especially for the past few years, like just working on myself, like understanding my position in the world, understanding my position in my community. It's important for me to lead with that. Mm. It's important for me to I crave it. You know, I'm a truth seeker,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I feel like it's important for us to seek the truth in order to move forward in a way that is not repetitive.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel like I'm seeing a lot of cycles, you know, I'm seeing mm-hmm. a lot of the, okay, we've been through this,
yeah.
you know what I mean? And it's just like, I feel like the reason why is because we've been evading the truth for whatever reason, whether it be personal reasons or whether it be, you know, communal reasons. It's just like, we have to get past a lot of things, you know, that's and real. I feel like the truth is the way. You know?
That's real.
Yeah.
I love that.
Dope.
I think that might've been the first time we got truth as in one word.
I think so.
Yeah. There we go.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah.
That's, that's the truth right there. man, well, Takia, we appreciate you first and foremost for being here,
spending some time
with us, dropping all the gems. Hope y'all picking them up.
Yes, sir.
But yeah, I mean, we wish you much success moving forward, obviously.
Thank you.
You know, with everything you got going, everything you're going to do, you got support with us here at the Up and Up always.
Likewise.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah. Yeah, man. And with that being said, I think it's safe to say Takia T-Dub Ward is officially a member of the Up and Up. Can we get a round of applause, baby? Yeah. Give it up.
Yes, yeah. Sir. In there.
And that's a wrap. Yo, what up? It's Rubino.
And this is DJ Earn.
We hope you enjoyed that episode and that now you have a better understanding of what it means to live life on the Up and Up.
To continue supporting the podcast and the entire Up and Up movement, be sure to rate, review, like, and subscribe.
As well as follow us at _TheUpAndUp on all social media platforms to stay connected with everything the Up and Up has coming your way.
Thanks for listening. And until the next one,
keep it on the Up and Up.